This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Barry Strauss of Cornell University, whose new book is The War That Made the Roman Empire, Antony, Cleopatra, and Octavian at Actium. The lovers have fled, Cleopatra and Antony. They fled back towards Alexandria. At some point, Alexandria is aware of the fact that there's been a defeat, but they don't learn it from Cleopatra. Cleopatra returns in triumph, returning to her palace. She rules a very, very powerful empire, a very rich empire, the richest of all. They have gold mines in Egypt. Antony, on the other hand, having left his army, abandoned his army, is in despair, what the Romans called melancholy. And Professor, I love the scene you present of Antony building a little shelter on a jetty and acting depressed and despairing. Was that artful on his part or genuine? Can we tell?
We can't tell. I mean, the sources say that he really was depressed, and perhaps he was. But I could also imagine that this was an act of cunning on his part to make people underestimate him, because it's always useful for leaders to be underestimated and to be able to fly under the radar. I don't think that Antony had quite given up yet.
The Alexandrian people, this is a powerful, sophisticated, extremely rich society, are watching these two and the way they negotiate with themselves from September, from their return in late 31 until Antony is going to take up battle against Octavian. What is Octavian doing in this period while Antony and Cleopatra are in Alexandria? He's taking a victory tour. And what is his major concern, Octavian? Having won Actium, what does he want to present to his new empire?
Well, he's got two things to be concerned about. First of all, he wants to make sure that Antony and Cleopatra are not able to rebuild their forces. So he wants to make sure that all these kings that Antony has put on thrones in the East are not going to be sending aid to Antony and Cleopatra to let them know that it's hopeless. Secondly, he's also concerned about the veterans who go back to Italy who are rioting because they want their rewards. They want to be paid and they want land. But to do that, Octavian needs to get the treasure from Egypt because he can't raise taxes anymore. There have been tax riots already in Italy. He actually has to go back to Italy at one point from the east, and he's almost killed in a storm off the coast of Greece. He's sailing. He's pushing things, sailing at a time of year when he shouldn't be sailing because the political situation in Italy is very dangerous for him. But he succeeds. He puts down the mutiny or near mutiny, and he goes back to the east, and he's making his way towards Egypt. Yeah. He wants to close the trap, close the pincers on Antony and Cleopatra.
And in the meantime, Cleopatra never gives up. She doesn't even pretend to be despairing. She orders a new fleet built in the Red Sea. What is her thinking?
She wants to build a new fleet with which she can sail to India and then reestablish herself in exile in India and have warships that will protect her and perhaps someday allow her to go back. She is the heir of a dynasty, and she has four children, and she's concerned about their future. She's dubious that she and Antony can stand up against Octavian in Egypt.
Antony, on the other hand, has these delusions that he can resist Antony when he comes marching with Herod. They come down from the Gulf coast across the isthmus into approaching. There's an approach from the east and an approach to the west. Both times they betray to Octavian. I get the feeling that everybody realizes Octavian's going to win, so they just pick their moment to go over to his side.
That's right. But it wouldn't have happened without clever diplomacy on Octavian's part. He had to play his cards right. On top of that, one can always wonder and suspect, what's Cleopatra's role in all of this? Has Cleopatra been giving orders to these people to let Octavian through? Is she negotiating with him? Is she turning on her lover?
The answer is yes, Professor. the answer is, this is a film noir. The professor asked the question at one point, is this a tragedy or a film noir? Well, I went for film noir the whole time. And you acknowledge that the sources acknowledge that there is a three-way negotiation, Antony and Octavian, Cleopatra and Octavian. And then I guess Antony and Cleopatra are lying to each other, that they're not negotiating with Octavian?
It certainly looks like they're lying to each other. about exactly what's going on in the negotiations. Yeah.
Octavian and wants the treasure, but he wants Antony dead. Does he tell Cleopatra what she has to pay? What cost for her children? What does he tell her?
Well, we don't know, but we think that he tells her you have to betray Antony, and then I'll let your children live. But even Cleopatra doubts very much that he will ever let Caesarion live.
Right. The heir to Caesar's title. Yeah. Caesarion, right. Who's now 16 years old. He's a man.
Yes, that's right. Right. Yes.
Which means he can be killed. All right. Now,
that's right.
I love this negotiation between them because it's going to come to an end. Antony keeps challenging Octavian in single combat. He's no longer taking good advice. I don't even think he's taking any advice. He's imagining that Octavian, this slight 20 years younger non-warrior, is going to march out in armor and fight Antony. It's just, all right, why didn't Antony commit suicide at this point? What held him back? Did he think he was going to fight the final battle? Is that what
he did? Okay. He thought he was going to fight the final battle. He thought that his men would remain loyal to him. He didn't imagine that they would actually turn and run to the enemy side when it came to the final battle.
Which is they did. I love the scene where the fleet sails out and they're approaching the Octavian fleet. And who puts up their oars? Octavian's side? Or
No. Antony's men put up their oars. They make it clear, we surrender.
Yeah.
We're going over to you. We're not fighting.
All of a sudden, these two forces charging each other, and they wind up shaking hands. Fine.
That's right.
So Antony is deserted by everyone, including including Cleopatra. But
yes.
He still doesn't yet believe that he's lost until she lies to him. She tells him she's dead.
That's right. She sends false information to him that she's committed suicide. So then he decides to commit suicide. He asks this trusty slave, whose name unbelievably is Eros or Cupid, to kill him. And Eros says nothing doing, and he kills himself instead. Maybe Eros thought he'd be tortured if he killed Antony, and perhaps tortured by Octavian. He'd prefer a clean death. Or maybe he was so loyal that he just couldn't kill his boss. Take your pick.
I can't help myself, Professor. Plutarch and Cassius Dio at this point are not entirely in agreement, but they're all we have, correct? I mean, these scenes
are all we have. They're all we have. And there is. So I have a colleague, I believe that she's in California. I forget whether she's at UCLA or USC, who says, nonsense, nonsense, nonsense. We can't believe any of this.
I agree.
It's all Octavian's propaganda.
I agree, because it's so theatrical. You know, you can see the scenery and behind them. She's in a mausoleum she's built, filled with firewood, because she means to burn it all down upon her treasure if she's invaded. She has one little window where the masons have drawled in the last of the building. And, and her servant women haul the bleeding to death Antony through the window. So
he botches his attempt to commit suicide. He's still alive. Cleopatra gets the word of what's happening, and she says, you know, I'm not dead, actually. So he's brought to the mausoleum. He's hauled up by these women who are having trouble, lacking upper body strength, hauling up. But they manage to do it clumsily. And then he comes in. He asks for wine because he's in so much pain. Cleopatra gives him wine, and then he dies in Cleopatra's arms.
August 1st. 30 BC. All right. Now we cut. We go immediately scene cut to Octavian. Three days later. What was it? 3 days later. It was soon.
Oh,
after.
No, that same day.
He enters the city, and the scene between Octavian and Cleopatra is also hard to imagine. I mean,
this is a few days later.
All right.
A few days later. A week later.
He convinces her not to commit suicide. He tricks her out of her treasury. So she's helpless. She's his prisoner now. Well, and he wants to take her back to Rome to ride in a triumph. She will not permit that, but she wants her children to live. So the negotiation between them, I can't tell who's winning. Can you?
I think she wins. I mean, he says that he wants to bring her back to Rome to march in a triumph, but it's not really clear that he wants to do that. She would be trouble. Her sister was brought back to Rome in a triumph by Caesar, and the crowd forced Caesar to let the sister live. And she lived out her life in Ephesus in exile until Antony had her killed, perhaps at Cleopatra's behest. I think Octavian thinks the best solution is for Cleopatra to leave the scene. And I think he says to her, in effect, if you commit suicide, I will let your children live. That is, your children by Antony. There's no way he's going to let Caesarion live, but Caesarion's out of the picture, or so Cleopatra thinks. She has sent Caesarion south to safety, to a port, an Egyptian port on the Red Sea, where he's supposed to take sail with his loyal tutor to India, where he can survive all of this.
Caesar's dead, Antony's dead, Cleopatra's still punching. She's 39 years old, Octavian's 33, a few years younger. Yeah. Yeah. And the professor speculates they're speaking in Latin because she was gifted in languages. Plutarch presents her as in a single tunic on a straw bed in mourning. Yes. But Cassius Dio, he doesn't go for it. He says she's a golden queen and she's got Caesar's love letters that she reads. It's spectacular.
Yes. But we can't really believe either of these sources. We don't know what happened. We really don't know what happened. I speculate that her slave is there and is listening in and is a source of information later on, but that's sheer speculation on my part.
It is August 8th when Octavian and Cleopatra have this dialogue that is really, it's head twisting back and forth between these two major players.
Yes.
However, she does want to die. She does want to die once she secured her children's fate. It is now August 10th. And again, we don't know. I always presumed that Hollywood had it right. We don't know. Was it a snake? Was it poison? What is your best assumption after all these sources 2,000 years later?
I was originally going to say the snake's impossible. That's a Hollywood detail. But I consulted a colleague of mine who's a herpetologist, and he assured me that it is entirely credible. Yes, it's not credible that she smuggled in a full-grown python, but a baby python will do the job just fine, 12 to 18 inches long, not very thick.
They call it a cobra. They call it an asp, but that could be
anything. Asp is just a Greek word for snake. It just means snake. But we don't know what kind of snake, but it would have been a cobra. I meant that, not python. So cobra and a baby cobra could have done the job just fine. So I'd like to believe it was done by the cobra.
Cobra Kingdom killed by a cobra. I got real suspicious.
Okay, you can be suspicious, and Plutarch and Cassius Dio say we're not really sure. And then I have a colleague, as I said, who says, I don't believe she committed suicide at all. I believe that Octavian killed her. But, you know, history's full of really weird things, and we can't rule it out just because it's weird.
Octavian's still on a campaign trail. All of this, the professor says, is about Caesarion.
Yes.
Everything he's done, Actium, Illyrium,
right.
Sextus Pompey, all about one 16-year-old.
Yeah, because remember, the guy we call Octavian called himself Gaius Julius Caesar. My name is Caesar. I am the son of Julius Caesar. I am the one and only son of Julius Caesar. And so Caesarion, unfortunately, has a tutor who betrays him and says, you know, you can go back to Alexandria. It's safe. After all, Octavian is your brother. He would never kill you. But as soon as Caesarion gets back to Alexandria, Octavian kills him.
August 29th, 30 BC. Yes. And when we come back, the marble city of Rome. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.